Our last speaker today, Darlene Saunders, will be speaking on reaching men of color, again, a new venue, through the women in their lives, lesson learned from the Impact Project. And Darlene is a certified health education specialist with experience in program development, management, research and evaluation, and in administering school and community health programs. She has served as a program director and investigator on numerous federally funded health disparities projects and is a visiting assistant professor at Towson University. So with that, Darlene, and afterwards, I'm going to get everyone up here for additional conversation.
Good afternoon. I am delighted to be able to share with you some of the preliminary study findings from the Men's Prostate Awareness Church Training we call IMPACT. IMPACT is a four-year initiative funded by the American Cancer Society for $1.6 million and is housed at the University of Maryland School of Public Health. Again, I have no financial relations to disclose. IMPACT is a community-based participatory research project. In today's presentation, I will briefly talk about the background and methods, some of our study findings, lessons learned, and implications for practice. African Americans, as we heard earlier, are at increased risk for prostate cancer, and they may benefit from receiving information that helps them to make an informed decision about prostate cancer screening. So the IMPACT Project had two research aims. The one was to develop and evaluate a church-based education intervention that looked at informed decision making, and then the second was to assess whether the inclusion of women as health partners actually increase the efficacy of informed decision-making for prostate cancer screening for our program participants. And so previous research suggests that there is some reluctance among men to access the health services, that men often spend less time with physicians during healthcare visits when they actually go to the doctor. They receive less advice about changing risk factors, and then there's overall lower participation in cancer screening trials, particularly among men of color. Now, indeed, the research does point to there is a role of women in men's health decision-making, and the research suggests that women serve as gatekeepers of health and wellness, and in fact, men do better when women are in their lives. Women oftentimes are the ones that are urging men to take care of themselves. They're urging men to get their PSA tests and screenings, as well as the digital rectal exams. And that men did state that the majority of their support came from their female partners. And so this really substantiated and justified us looking at the research aim two, looking at the efficacy of including women in a men's health promotion project. So in the next two slides, I'm going to briefly discuss our research design and our methods. And I'll start with our church selection. We identified churches in Prince George's County, Maryland. Why did we choose Prince George's County, Maryland? Because Prince George's County, Maryland has the second incidence of prostate cancer in the state. We work with primarily African-American congregations, and we wanted churches that had the size between 100 and 500 congregants. Very important, we selected churches that had strong pastoral support and leadership. This is really important in terms of having the pastor promote the program in the church and also getting our participants. And also, we wanted within each church a ministry that would take this on and where this would be home. And so that would be, after the workshops were completed, we wanted them to continue. And so often churches either looked at the men's ministry, the deacon's ministry, or health ministry. Some churches had that. So with our selection criteria, we then moved to church recruitment. We had two community partners, and they played an integral role for us to really get the churches on board. Two primary things that we had to do to get the churches on board. And once the community health partners talked to the pastors, answered any questions. The pastor had to sign a consent form as well as a church memorandum of understanding, which specified the roles and responsibilities from the church side, and then it specified the roles and responsibilities from the research teams. And so once we had the churches on board, we randomized according to size. And we had two study conditions, one being the health partner condition and the other being the men-only condition. Now, we asked churches to recruit up to 24 eligible men. And the churches, and we also asked the churches for a health partner condition for the men to bring the women to the workshops with them. Men were incentivized by, after attending each workshop and filling out the assessments for each of the workshops. Now, let me quickly talk about methods. Again, the church-based intervention, we had two study conditions. The only difference between the men-only and the health partner condition is that at workshops 2 and 4 for the health partner conditions, we had separate breakouts for the men and women. The intervention was led by our community health advisors, which were trained by our study team and certified, and they implemented the 4-part prostate cancer health series in their churches. We had program assessments, we had a baseline survey, we had post-workshop surveys after each of our series workshops, and then we had a 6-month follow-up survey as well as the 12-month follow-up survey. Now, this slide gives you an example of the tailored recruitment strategies for men and women in our health partner churches. And we see some of the breakout sessions for the men and women in this study condition. Now I want to transition to some of our study findings at baseline and at workshop 4. We had 289 African-American men between the ages of 40 to 69 years with no history of prostate cancer participate in our program. We had 97 men from our health partner churches and 192 men from our men-only churches. At the time of analysis, we had 8 health partner churches and 10 men-only churches, and we had conducted at that time 76 workshops. The impact participants had a relatively high knowledge of prostate general cancer knowledge, and the next slide depicts the 9 items that we looked at to assess their general prostate cancer knowledge. On the right columns, you see the percent correct for both the health partner and the men only in terms of these items at baseline. We were also very interested at baseline to see the men if they've had a PSA test or a digital rectal exam, and we see that a higher proportion of men had a DR exam, and that in terms of also a higher proportion of men in the men's only group reported getting a PSA test than men in the health partner group, and this was one of the significant differences we see at our two groups prior to treatment. We also wanted to see whether or not men did receive a PSA test and DRE exam within the 12 months at baseline, and we were really looking at compliance here. This slide reports at baseline and workshop 4 where participants were in their stage of decision-making. And irrespective of being in the health partner condition or the men-only condition, we see increases from baseline to workshop 4 for men that said they had already made their mind about a screening decision and that they were unlikely to change their mind. On follow-up surveys, we also had an item that assessed participants' preparation for decision-making. This scale consisted of 10 items on a 1 to 5 Likert scale, which ranged from not at all to a great deal. This slide depicts preparation for decision-making at workshop 4. Participants reported average mean score was relatively high, so that indicated that the program helped them quite a bit to a great deal in their preparation for decision making. Again, we randomized 8 churches into our health partner condition. We had 45 women participate in the health partner condition, and 97 men participate in the health partner condition. And so there was significant under-enrollment from our health partner condition to the men-only condition. And this indicates about 47% of men, enrolled men in the health partner condition, actually brought a female to work to at least one of the workshops. This slide depicts the recruitment and retention data for four impact workshops. Now, all participants were asked to attend all the four workshops. However, in reality, they could attend as few as one of the workshops or as many as four, which is the completion of the workshop series. And enrollment could occur at any time during the workshop series. And so what we found out from analysis of the data is that enrollment failed to reach the 24 eligible men in 15 out of our 18 churches. And the average enrollment retention across the four workshops were 68.5% for workshop two, 64.3% for workshop three, and 61.2% in workshop four. So overall, about 65% retention into the four-part workshop series. So we learned some valuable lessons that we would, for involving women as health partners, that we would like to share with other investigators that are interested in conducting similar studies. First, we found it really important that we have to have tailored strategies for recruiting women into a men's health promotion program, and also really to explain very clearly to men why we were asking women to participate. And in fact, we anticipated some of the concerns, and we wanted to give men an opportunity, a chance to be able to talk and dialogue in the absence of the health partner. And so that's why we had separate breakout sessions at workshop two and four. And in fact, some of the reluctance that men revealed to us in this health partner condition was that they wanted opportunities to fellowship with other men and talk about men's issues in an all-male forum without their female partner. And so this and observing this, this may attribute to why we had lesser number of men enrolled in actually the health partner condition. One of the things that we found out that was really important was to put the program in the context of family health. In fact, this resonated really well with both the men and the women in the health partner condition. And we observed that the churches that did this, they were able to bolster their enrollment into the Impact Workshop Series. And some of the churches actually had Family and Friends Sunday, where they conveyed with the community health advisors that were trained by a program. They actually talked to the parishioners in the church, and they focused on the Impact Program, and that also helped to bolster the participation in the Impact Series at their church. So, in conclusion, we found it very important to provide prostate health information to African American men to help them make an informed decision about prostate cancer screening. And although we didn't have a lot of preliminary data that showed many significant findings, the efficacy associated with including women as health partners is still being investigated by our research team. And because there's so little research that really looks at including women in, first of all, a faith-based intervention and then a men's health promotion program, we believe that this randomized controlled trial has documenting some promising health communication strategies to really reach African-American men in faith-based settings. So I would like to acknowledge our research team. It's a community-based research team, and our principal investigator was Dr. Cheryl L. Holt. I can take any questions. Okay, yes. Was I surprised by the results? In terms of including women?
Men didn't like to talk about sexual health problems about other men's partners.
You know what, when you think about it, that wouldn't be, you know, surprising with that. No, not at all.
We learned that.
Not at all.
Women's health, the accident of women's health as a a safe, private place for women, by women, for women to be related to. So why would you suppose that men would be different than women?
Well, what we did was, and that's why we had separate breakout sessions, because so that they could dialogue. And one of the things we know is really important, the whole context of, in terms of looking at family health. And so we found it very important, because most often when men were making decision about, you know, screening, or if they had a cancer diagnosis, they were talking to their women or their female partner. And so that's why we looked at the justification with that. Certainly, we're learning a lot of lessons in how to better, you know, frame this. But in terms of the whole context of family health, I think for the churches that did that, they understood the implications of that. Certainly, you know, definitely having separate breakouts. But for them to talk about, the men and women to talk about adherence to screening and doing it as a couple, many of our health partners were spouses, which about 90% were so. And so this could improve the overall health of the family. So, and we also wanted to look at it in a generational approach, knowing that if men, you know, got this information in the family context, then they can pass it to their nephews, their sons, and talk to them before the age that some of these problems occur. So that's why we looked at that. Yes, that did come up, and that was one of the reasons why that we actually had the pastors actually appointed two individuals that would serve as community health advisors. For the men-only churches, of course, it was two men, and in our health partner churches, we had a female-male dyad. So they did talk about that. We did, and for a fuller description of how we developed the project, we did have an article in the it's a faith-based initiative special call, so we described that. So men did talk about that, and there were some concern, but I think one of the things that validates having this kind of intervention in a church-based setting is because of the trust factor. They believe that their brother, you know, would not tell them to participate in something that would be harmful for them. Also, we found that a lot of the brothers talked about and really encouraged men to participate in clinical trials. You know, and because there's a fear with that dating to, you know, with some of the atrocities in the public health. And so it served as a motivator factor, too, for that. So
I'm going to ask all the panelists to come up now for some additional questions. The last 5 minutes. I wonder, I think, again, my reflection is you're in a unique population here. And you're getting at the men that oftentimes we don't get. But I wonder, going back to Sal's comment, if you had chosen men who didn't have a male confidant, you may have found a difference by adding in the female partner. So it's a great research study. Thank you for sharing lessons learned.
Yeah.